Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show featuring the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm your host for the day, Greta Anderson, and I'm joined in the studio by Pat Schlarbaum, who will be giving us a phonology, and Evan Taylor, our capable engineer. He will also be providing some comments later in the show. We slipped and slid our way into the studio and don't expect a whole lot of our guests to. We'll be reaching them by phone. Lo and behold, the weatherman was right. It is a solid sheet of ice outside, and please take caution when going anywhere today. Better yet, just don't. Stay right at home. Tune to KHOI, and you'll be celebrating community and volunteerism in the safety of your own home. Here's Vaughn Kettleson with ISU Extension climatologist Elwin Taylor for our weekly weather update.
Well, that freezing rain came on schedule last night. Vaughn Kettleson here talking weather on KHOI Community Radio with ISU Extension climatologist Dr. Ellen Taylor. Now the question is, Ellen, will the warmer temperatures be coming on schedule?
Well, it looks like they will, and we will have warmer temperatures that will be pleasant. In fact, the 6 to 10 day outlook even says warmer than usual, and that's for a high percentage of the nation. So we've got an enjoyable situation coming our way, and let's take advantage of it. It's that kind of thing. We usually have a thaw or two in the early part of the year, January thaw, February thaw. That isn't uncommon in our part of the world, and since it isn't uncommon, we can just learn to enjoy it, I think, would be the right way. And it's always good when we've had an ice storm, and there's been some spots of ice around, to get a good opportunity to get that melted out of the way. And also, this will be the opportunity not to get the frost completely out of the soil in our fields, but to keep it from going so deep into the ground as it has done in the a couple of winters in the past, especially when we had low snow. We do anticipate that we will be having daytime temperatures reaching 40 degrees by Wednesday and maybe the upper 40s by Thursday and Friday. 6 to 10 day outlook, yes, warmer than usual, and yes, slightly above usual chance of having precipitation, but at least that's not so likely to be snow that would accumulate.
Well, in the meantime, if you do have to be out and about today, do plan and take it slow and easy because of slick conditions in our listening area. Joined here on KHOI Community Radio by ISU Extension climatologist Dr. Ellen Taylor, I'm Vaughn Kettleson.
And we're back at KHOI Community Radio. Of course, today is the day the nation celebrates the birthday of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Later in the day at 7 p.m., KHOI will air one of his speeches from the Pacifica Archives. Pacifica Radio, which has always focused on people's movements, has the most extensive collection of audio of this great leader. And leadership is one of the themes of today's Local Talk show. Later, we have Elizabeth Dinchel, who is the statewide leader of Action Iowa, formerly Pantsuit Nation. And we will hear my interview of Jeanette Colton, who has won the Ames Humanitarian Award for the year 2017 and will be honored at tonight's Martin Luther King Day celebration at the middle school. Of course, that celebration could be postponed if the ice does not melt in time. The celebration is to begin at 6:30 with doors opening at 6. But first we have a phonology and some words regarding the leader among the feathered kingdom. Pat Schlarbaum, our reporter on the Natural Beat, is here along with Jennifer Knox on the phone to talk to us about Iowa Bird of Mouth. Hi, Jennifer.
Yes. Hi, Greta. How are you?
Well, we made it in.
Hi.
No broken bones yet. The bald eagle is the bird of the month, am I right?
Yes. This month's bird on the spotlight bird on Iowa Bird of Mouth, which is a crowdsourced poetry project online, is the bald eagle. Very timely, considering we have the inauguration coming up. The symbol of our nation.
And Pat always brings that up.
Yeah, as our national symbol, there's a lot of river communities that are celebrating the bald eagles. So your timing as designating the bald eagle as the bird of mouth, Mm-hmm. So are there selected shorts from poets or how?
Yes, actually, I have taken some parts of the poem. So far, to all the poems, we've had about 200 submissions, a little over 200. The biggest surprise for me this month, I don't know who's going to submit and I don't know where they're from, but I woke up one morning and there were all these acrostics had been written on the poem overnight. And if you're not familiar with an acrostic, what that form is you take the first letter of the word. So for bald eagle, it would be the first line would begin with B, the next line would begin with A, and then L and D, and so forth. And you write a word starting with that letter. And there were acrostics all over the poem. And it was like waking up and seeing that somebody had planted a very unusual flower all over your yard. And I'm assuming that this was done by a class, some sort of school class somewhere. And I'm just delighted. So I have two of those this morning, two acrostics.
Jennifer, if the audience wants to listen, to read along with you as you speak, is there a website they can go to?
Absolutely. IowaBirdOfMouth.com.
IowaBirdOfMouth.com. Great.
And if you go to the submit page.
Submit.
In the window at the bottom left corner, that's where you can see everything that's been written so far.
Okay.
So you have to scroll to find these. But the first one is bald, awesome, lively denominators. Ever so amazing. As chill as ice. Glamorous, living to the fullest, eyesight of a telescope. Survivors.
Excellent.
That was the first acrostic I found one morning. And the next, there were several. This is another. Beautiful angels. Lovely, daring, elegant, amazing, gathering, luxurious, excellent.
Yeah,
so
people,
I was so thrilled, and they all came from the same URL
right
on the internet. So I assumed that this was a group of students,
school children,
children working together, and they were just lovely to find. This, if you scroll up to the top of the poem, this is the second submission that was in it. I think it's very moving. Driving gravel on an Arctic Sunday, we came up over a crest and saw blood smeared across the snow, gore lining the muddy road through the field, and three young eagles tearing apart two deer they'd either found or killed. Mom and Dad hung back on the hill, watching us slow to take pictures of their gigantic babies, bibs and beaks red as the partridge berries that popped from those ditches in March, spiked head feathers fanned out, lethal goofballs babble and bawk-bawking. Family day, you declared. Better than a trip to Disneyland if you're an eagle, I said. Squinting into the white horizon for more witnesses, more spring, more life.
Ah.
I know, right?
Quite specific in it, the visuals that it creates. I might point out that eagles do not kill livestock or deer.
Oh, they found these.
They are certainly excellent scavengers, though, as people
witness. What's the biggest animal that a bald eagle could kill? Pat?
Well, a big bald eagle would be 12 pounds and can't carry more than 1 or 2 pounds. So usually it's about a 2-pound fish.
Okay. No cats? What about house
well,
cats?
Well, now kittens and smaller cats, yeah. That it's not to say that a big predator would not harm those, but it wouldn't be their targeted species.
Not their flavor of choice.
You're right. Yeah.
Okay.
That's definitely fish, huh?
Pretty much. The growing eagle population is exhibiting a lot of variance in its diet, and because they are good scavengers, but so roadkill and those kind of things, and an occasional rabbit or someone's domestic dog or cat. It have to be pretty small though, so not to dwell there, not to worry.
I've come across lately a lot of photoshopped pictures on the internet of eagles carrying off animals that they could never possibly carry off.
Yeah, and even babies, you know, the turn of the 20th century, it was okay to remove eagles because they were thought to carry off people's children. And it's just not in the mix, but occasionally we see a Photoshop, you know, doll of a trained eagle carrying one off. But it just doesn't happen.
Right.
Okay, well, Jennifer, let's do one more poem. The sound isn't quite as good as if you've been in the studio, so, and we completely understand you're out there in Nevada. Choose one more poem for us that we could hear.
This, the writer, and I don't know if you all have discuss this, but anyone can submit anytime, place to the iowabirdofmouth.com if you come onto our site and share your words with us about bald eagles, and we would love to see them and add them to the entire poem. Somebody put a title, whoever wrote this, put a title with it called Bald Eagles in the Field. She was almost gone at that point, enough so we could start to make plans. Bright for a February near Fishtown, Skagit Bay, another sun on the earth shining upwards. On our way for groceries, we saw one eagle in a field, then another. I had never seen two bald eagles together like that, and it felt like a sign, something that would shift things forever. But it wasn't really. It was just a moment. Dad and daughter pulled over in the car, silent and breathing for a singular instance, before all we knew took flight.
Hmm. Oh, I love it.
It
inspires a lot of eagle ecology this time of year, the reference to perching side by side. They are traditionally a solitary species, so this time of year, though, the food kind of brings them closer and closer together. And as 5-year-old adults, that becomes mating and nesting behavior, too. So this time of year, they'll perch and fish and steal fish from one another and interact, but for the most part, they're a solitary species.
I have seen so many raptors lately on telephone poles and everywhere. Yeah. It's almost like somebody just turned on the raptors.
Yeah, they come here in our open, no snow makes the mice and the rabbits a little more vulnerable. And so the migrating red-tailed hawks, and there's a rough-legged hawk, and the visiting eagles. So all the northern birds are here in Iowa this time of year.
This is the time of year where people go to our rivers and watch the eagles in their nesting pairs. Is that right?
Yes. We have about 12 different bald eagle events around the state. But I think I'll kind of weave this into a bald eagle phenology, if you can bear with me here. Phenology is recording nature's happenings on the date that they occur. So this time of the winter, the majority of the Iowa eagle population have been joined with eagle visitors from the north, because eagles seek out areas of open water. And the moving water below dams also provide an area where the fish congregate for oxygen. And then there's a specific fish known as a gizzard shad, and they're stunned with the changing water temperatures and are floating on the surface. So this is a perfect recipe. This out brings them together. So the trees around open water areas will be lined with eagles perching side by side. And for a solitary species, again, winter breaks down a lot of the social barriers and eagles congregate. River communities have viewed this as a great opportunity to celebrate our national symbol. And our first bald eagle event was in 1985 at Keokuk. And since that time, we have established eagle events at 11 other sites to celebrate our national symbol. At the 30th bald eagle event in 2015 in Keokuk, there were over 300 eagles in the air at one time. So people get a chance to see their national symbol in all its glory. We do have indoor programs. We're live educational bald eagles do programs, recorded programs. There's going to be a chance to see our replica bald eagle nest. And it's just a big pile of sticks, weighs about 400 pounds.
You carry it around in the back of your truck.
Yeah, it's kind of unwieldy, and takes four of us to unload it.
But then
we let little toddlers sit in it. So it's got the eggs and the little eaglet, you know, and And kids really respond as they walk up to it. They see other kids in it, and then they want to get in it. It really triggers quite a thing that I didn't predict when we first started this replica nest. There was a mother and her teenage son, and he was a pretty big 13-year-old. And his sister was in front of the replica nest getting their picture taken. The woman kind of looked over, so then she said, "This is great. When Greg was 3 years old, I took a picture of him in the nest. And I know it was 9 years ago because I was pregnant with his sister, you know." So then she got on her phone and called up her oldest daughter, who brought their little granddaughter.
Oh, it's so, a multi-generation.
Yeah, it's like a family tradition now that who knew this replica eagle nest? So I got a picture of all three generations.
Well, is your nest going to be available for folks anywhere in the area soon?
Yeah, coming up February 11th, we're going to be at downtown Des Moines at the Southeast 6th Street. We'll put these locations on our website. So February 10th, I'm going to be at Grays Lake where there's nesting bald eagles.
Okay.
So the replica nest kind of adds to that excitement. But the pair last year were carrying sticks to their nest and mating. So how can, you know.
At this time of year.
Who would predict that on Valentine's Day? But it's been happening every year. It's, you know, even as
love is in the air.
Yeah, well, it's what happens in February, I guess, with bald eagles and with a lot of things. So those dates are Friday, February 10th at Grays Lake, and Saturday, February 11th at this. It's a Fellowship Baptist Church on Southeast 6th. In Des Moines. And then on February 26th, we'll be at Sailorville with the replica nest and an opportunity to celebrate our national symbol in all its glory.
All right.
How fun.
It's a hoot.
Yeah. And, of course, you can celebrate our national symbol by writing a poem about it and submitting it to iowabirdofmouth.com.
People from anywhere in the world can submit.
Join in. Celebrate the eagles.
Thank you so much, Jennifer.
Thank you, Greta. Thank you, Pat. You
stay safe.
Too.
And, Pat, do you have any other announcements for us in the natural world?
Well, we've got 300 trumpeter swans up at Beamer's Pond, which is just west of Webster City on Highway 20. And it's where Highway 17 goes back to the north to Eagle Grove. There's a barrel pit, a big few acres of water, and 300 trumpeter swans. They return every afternoon about 3:30 or 4 from foraging, and you get to see these big white birds in the air, and it's really something that we did not predict, that we'd have overwintering trumpeter swans in Iowa, and now there's a spot with over 300.
It's amazing. So they were endangered.
Yeah, it's been a complete rejuvenation. The population had dwindled to 69 birds in the 1930s in the Yellowstone area, and they need the open water. So there's a lot of geese keeping the water open. So keep an eye out here in Ada Hayden also. There should be some swans around. It's just very uplifting.
Well, thank you so much, Pat, for your uplifting segment. I've got another uplifting segment coming right now. My interview with Jeanette Colton, who has been named the winner of this year's Ames Humanitarian Award. When Jeanette was growing up in Chile, she had always talked about wanting to travel and live in other places. Then, at age 17, she got the chance, ending up in Iowa City and then Ames. Here's Jeanette Colton telling her story and why she has always had a heart for the outsiders in the community.
I was 17 when I came to the U.S. I didn't know anybody. I didn't speak any English. I was a nanny. And I know what it feels to be an outsider, to be a foreigner. So I work hard on it because of I know what it feels, also because that's who I am. I mean, I grew up in dictatorship.
In Chile?
Yes. I was used to always being the outsiders, even there, because we were opposed to the dictator.
So you came here to Ames as a nanny or to the U.S.?
I was in Iowa City, yes.
Okay.
It was a sweet gig. The family that needed me, they only needed me for like 4 days, for 2 hours every day. It was awesome. I love them. We still stay in touch. So they're family to me.
And how did you find out about this gig?
My sister worked for an adoption agency, and this family adopted a little girl from Chile. And this family met me, and then that was it. And then a month later, they sent me a letter, and they're saying, would you like to come and live with us? So it was all magical, as life is.
So the child you were a nanny for was from Chile.
Yes.
You were able to communicate some of your culture and language,
little.
Of course. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. So then your path to Ames.
Then I went back to Chile and the same family. They invited me for a little bit, and I fell in love with a wonderful man. And then we just decided, he was in Iowa City. He got a job in Ames, and we decided to come together in Ames. I love Ames.
So a wonderful story, a personal story. Now explain, what have you been doing in the community to help?
Sure. I work with the Ames Progressive Alliance. We've been working with inclusive events. It's important to me to reach for the marginalized community. I call it the hidden community. They're here, but they're not always represented. So I translate, I interpret for the Ames School District. And through that, I've been able to help a lot of families. I'm helping them get the things that they're already available for them, but they don't know, like bus transportation, things that they just don't have access to it because they don't know that it exists.
What do you think the people of Ames need to know about this community in our midst?
They are definitely a hidden population. They're not seen as members of the community, I don't think. There is a lot of economy that comes because of these families, because they get houses, they take care of their houses, they want to provide for their children, they go out and they buy things, but they're not represented as part of the community. I don't see it. For them, it is scary to surface because they don't know how they'll be perceived by the community. So I think it's just this huge gap, and I think we as a community could do a better job involving everyone in this process, no matter where you came from.
How could we do that as a community, bridge the gap between the immigrants in our community who are afraid to surface and the white people who dominate?
I think we need to pay attention of what our leaders in the community are doing or the messages that they're sending. For instance, the school district just did this Raptor system. It's a security system for how people come in through the school, which is lovely because we need the security, right? I'm not advocating against having anything. But did anybody think about the people that perhaps do not have some sort of identification? Because in order to access the school, you have to present some sort of identification. And if you don't have it, how is that person going to get there? So was there any training? And I'm pretty sure there wasn't any training on how you address this. What things can or you cannot ask? There are things that you cannot ask anybody because that would be a violation of their civil rights. So I feel like we do this for this part of the population and we completely overlook another part of the population. So I have parents texting me before interpretations. They're like, can you meet me outside? And this has happened with every family I have interpreted for. They're, can you meet me outside? So then I come in with them. It shouldn't be like that. They should be able to come in.
That's really interesting. That's really telling. And on the positive side of things, besides, not sending negative messages, how can we send positive, inclusive, inviting messages to this community?
You say hi. If you're, right? You say hi when they're out. When your child has a new boy or girl at the school, invite them for a play date. Invite them over for dinner. And try, when they're at a pickup, say hi. When you see them, when you see somebody struggling with their children because they're having a tantrum, but you don't know what, help them out. And it's just, or just wave, hold the door. Things that you do for everyone, do it for everyone. right? Just because they're speaking a different language, they're not on your peripheral. And I'm not saying just Hispanic family. Just do it for everybody. Just show that kindness that you would like to receive. Show it to them. And they're little things. Those personal touches, those matter.
And you've really pointed out how much children can help us bridge the gap, because so often children aren't set up with these barriers between them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If their best friend happens to be from anywhere, just invite them and then get to know their families. I think that's the biggest thing that you could do. Just have them as part of the community, not just people that happen to be here from a different country and they happen to live here. You get here, you're part of the community. That should be an automatic.
I'm curious, how was it for you learning English when you were a nanny? You came without knowing any English. And was the child speaking or still an infant at that time?
It was very funny. She knew mostly Spanish. And she talked just a little bit, not that much. So the family wanted her to speak English. So we were both learning English at the same time, which was very neat. It was funny. It was hard. I cannot. It was hard. It was a beautiful experience. I would do it again. But there were many nights that I just put myself to sleep crying because the loneliness. I was 17 years old. I mean, I've been in translations with moms that they cry on the translations because they say, this is so lonely. And it is. It is. It's lonely to learn the language. You make a mistake and you make it again. I still make mistakes with language. And it's just, you feel defeated. You're trying and you feel defeated. But then I've been so lucky that I'm surrounded, and I always been surrounded by beautiful people. I am so lucky, so grateful for the people that are in my life. They have empowered me to do what I do. And that mom crying at that school meeting, she should have the same thing I did.
Well, you've definitely represented why you have received the Ames Humanitarian Award for 2017. We wish you very well and enjoy your moment on the stage.
Thank you, Greta. My 15 minutes of fame. I love it. Thank you, Greta, for having me.
You're welcome. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host, Greta Anderson, and we just heard from Jeanette Colton, the winner of the 2017 Ames Humanitarian Award. It is not yet clear whether she'll be receiving that award tonight at the Ames Middle School or whether that event will be postponed. Our next interview is also about a dynamic female leader. I spoke yesterday with Elizabeth Dinshell. She is state leader of the organization Action Iowa, the evolution of Pantsuit Nation. She is working hard to make sure Iowans and Americans maintain their rights and some of the institutions that we treasure. Here's Elizabeth Dinshell.
We have organized at the state level a group called Action Iowa, and it was actually started as a chapter of the group Pantsuit Nation that had kind of taken over right before the election. And the group had moved from being sad about the election and kind of feeling confused and wanting to come to terms with it and find like-minded people to wanting to be active and to kind of form resistance and positive action that would keep powers at check, since especially in Iowa, we were overtaken by Republicans in all of our legislative houses.
Right. So the Iowa Senate, as well as the Iowa House, is now Republican, along with the governor's house. This is something that is causing a flurry of legislation to be proposed that folks who might have been supporting Hillary Clinton to begin with would be upset about. Talk about your priorities. What are you just kind of putting out fires right now, hoping to put out fires, keeping people informed?
What we've done is we have a state chapter, and then we've broken into regional chapters, which are Johnson County, Des Moines, Sioux City, Cedar Valley, and we're organizing Story County and Cedar Rapids right now. And at all of those levels, there are six issues-based committees that are covering healthcare, common sense gun laws, human rights we're looking at. Labor is something else we're extremely interested in. Getting women involved in politics is another one of those. Since the group kind of started as Pantsuit Nation, knowing that more than 75% of our representatives are male, that makes that a concern for us and something we want to work for, and education being our last issue committee. And all of the committees are organized at the regional level, and then there's a state central committee where the leaders of all of the regional committees meet. And we've started out with calls to actions where we are actively going as concerned citizens to lobby in all of our legislature's offices from top to bottom, national to state, and even further down into city council. Like, we were just all at the Iowa City meeting about developing Iowa City as a sanctuary city. But this week, for example, one of our big actions that will be coming out will be concerning bargaining rights for state employees. And so we will be encouraging our members to call their representatives to ensure that our state employees can keep their bargaining rights intact. So in a way, we're putting out fires. In another way, we're being proactive. Our education committee is absolutely wonderful and super organized and has been joined by other groups. And that's one of the cornerstones of what we're doing, is we're organizing with other groups to build kind of like coalitions, because we are working under that idea that we are stronger together, and we really are. Our last meeting in Johnson County, we had over 150 people show up, 10 elected legislators, and groups from labor unions and Planned Parenthood that came out, Moms Demand Action, and talked to our committees, and we started lining up our actions to make sure that we're working together.
You mentioned that you are working toward organizing Story County. Is there anything more our listeners could know if they wanted to join in that effort?
Sure. They can go to Facebook and look up Action Iowa Story County and like that. And we will be in touch with people about when we're going to have a meeting. Right now, our Story County group had been meeting with our Des Moines group, but it was getting large enough that we could split off and make Story County its own regional chapter.
Okay. And about the labor rights, Branstad in his condition of the state address talked about health care maybe being removed from collective bargaining. Is there another bill that's being proposed by a legislator that would remove all collective bargaining from state employees?
There's talks about it, and so it's one of the things that we're actively monitoring as a threat to what we're working on. But definitely the healthcare being one of the important things that we're looking at in the bargaining unit, because anytime you open the door to start removing power from the bargaining units, it can open the door for further actions. And one of the things that we are working on with that is talking to the various unions, like the teachers union, that would lose some of those rights. It's deeply concerning, deeply concerning, because we want to make sure that no power is being removed from the bargaining.
So is Pantsuit Nation, now Action Iowa, is it mainly women who are organizing, or a majority women?
It is majority women, and I think it will continue to be probably dominated that way. I think women feel like they have not had a voice, and things coming up like the Women's March that's happening in Des Moines and in Washington, D.C., I think has really empowered women to feel like it's their time to step up and take a stand. And men are welcome, and we definitely and certainly have men in our groups, and we want to make sure that we're working with men, so it's not something they're excluded from at all. But it's just been overwhelming to see the amount of women who have stepped forward and want to be leaders and want to have a voice in this process.
Great. Tell me just a little bit about yourself.
I'm actually originally from Florida. I lived there my whole life. I didn't leave there until I came to Iowa nearly 4 years ago. I have degrees in history and political science and public administration, but I've been organizing and working on community issues and political campaigns since before I could vote. And I hope that this new movement, one of the things that it teaches everybody is that the government that happens right outside of our front door is the one that has the largest impact on our everyday life. So people need to start going to their county supervisor meetings and their city council meetings, school board meetings, because those have such an impact on the bigger part of our life and even our state. I mean, now we're seeing with our state legislature things that are affecting state employees. There's so much power right where we are. I'm also a first-generation college graduate and went through school on student loans, an opportunity that otherwise would not have been afforded to me. I've worked minimum wage jobs. I've lived in poverty as a child and an adult. Certainly things are different for me now, but I'm able to take that experience that I've had in my life and apply it to my own principles of social justice and how we should move forward and help people who are not in a position to either have a voice or understand enough about the process to get involved. And we want to lift those people up with us, you know, give them a voice and give them a place to be. In our group, everybody's a leader and everyone has the opportunity to be a leader. And I think that's really important to keeping this movement moving forward.
And that was Elizabeth Denshall from Action Iowa, formerly Pantsuit Nation, talking about some of the activities that her group does. We will link to the Facebook page that she referenced, Action Iowa of Story County. It's just getting started, but I know that the group is very active in Iowa City and elsewhere. We have just been joined by Brian Dudley out in the main area, so we're going to go straight to our next segment. Evan Taylor, you had a conversation with a long conversation, an hour long session with a young man who we lost over the weekend.
Yes, as many individuals in the Ames community know, especially individuals who are connected to the local music scene, we lost a very kind, beautiful, generous, creative soul the other day on Friday. I was fortunate enough to have known Charlie Vestal and to have sat down with him in the studio for an hour just 11 days before this, where we had an hour on the air where we talked, we played music, we laughed, we had some fun, introspective sort of conversations. And we have a couple of clips from that we can play. What do you want to start, Greta?
Well, let's hear Charlie's voice.
Alrighty, so this is a song that he played about Gumby, followed up by some comments on Charlie's songwriting style and what he goes through in order to produce a song and to come up with one.
Gumby's in America. He jumped out of the TV. Stay away from those Americans who'll try to mold you into something that you're not. Gumby's in America and he's in love with you and me. Gumby's an American hero with Pokey at his side. No one else can hear his thoughts when he cries at night. Yes, Gumby's an American, and he cries at night. Gumby took a chill pill last night. He didn't know just what it was. It messed him up inside his clay mind, but the adventure still goes on. Him and Pokey are headed for the Amazon. And I'll say, honey, you better grab my camera. I think that's Gumby, and he's in America. Gumby's in America. Him and Pokey are roaming through the land. They've got a lot to learn from people, and they're with Prickle and the Blockheads too. Gumby's in America, and he's in love with the day. He's in love with the day. With the, with the, with the day.
One of my favorite things about Charlie and Charlie's music is just the pure whimsical nature of his songs. I can't help but smile as a result. Charlie, do you have any insight on where you find your material, where you come up with it? I mean, how does the songwriting process look to you?
I guess it would vary a bit from song to song. Well, you know, because it's one thing, like this year, like, so here I have my set list in front of me, and it's like, in retrospect, I could be like, that's how this one came about, and so on. I don't really have a set of a formula. So with each song, it begins to tell its own story. I have some techniques as far as, one technique that I've used is just sometimes it comes about by, so I'll like come up with a chord progression, and then the words that I choose to use mostly just, sometimes they'll come about in a flow of consciousness kind of way, right? Sometimes it can then give the lyrics a nonsensical flair or touch or whatnot. But I know that I have some songs that will have the sort of nonsensical flow, but then it'll weave in, what's the word I'm looking for? It'll simultaneously weave it with something somewhat autobiographical. It just always kind of depends. Of course, Gumby, the song I just played, Gumby's in America, that song, it's like topical and imaginative. It's topical because I happen to be talking about an actual, like a proper noun, if you will, a cultural figure, icon, stop motion animation figurine kind of. Yeah, I've always loved Gumby. So I just took it upon myself to, I was actually, when I wrote this song last early summer, I was in my bedroom and I just sat there with my guitar and I thought, I'll write a song. I don't remember, you know, if it had been a little while since I had done that, but I picked up my guitar and had my mindset, I'm going to write a song. And I had a Gumby figurine standing up like this. It was just because I am a fan of Gumby, so I have a couple. And anyways, as odd as this sounds, I had Gumby just standing right there, and I kind of just, I took that and ran, and so kind of on the fly, improvising sort of, I had the guitar, and I just kind of thought, that melody kind of just popped, all of a sudden, popped in the Gumby's in America. So I start elaborating more on that and messing with that. And so, yeah, it varies. Like that, like I said, it happened to just be, my idea is this said character, but then I just kind of like thought of a little story, I kind of let my imagination flow. So how the songs come about. Yeah, I just, it's always a different experience. It's a lot of just, thinking what will work with this melody, or, you know, sometimes it'll kind of, I'll have something shaped and I'll be like, oh no, I gotta do this. I'm not sure if I do have like one said formula, because I've tried different things. And always, I think too, what keeps songwriting fun still in this day and age in my life is just kind of that openness of not really having one, oh, this is how we do it, or this is how I do it. But you know, I mean, there can be ways that could be like a signature, like something in the process that's repeated. And I think that would be natural, right? Mm-hmm. So, like I said, some of my songs tend to have a mix of nonsensical lyrics with somewhat autobiographical thing too. So I kind of like the flow of consciousness, and then it can always be weaved into something else, you know. So, yeah.
Right on. Well, you heard it from the man himself. A method of songwriting as eclectic as the music.
And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for today, Greta Anderson. I'm joined in the studio by my engineer, Evan Taylor, and we just heard his voice. He has a 1 p.m. show on Friday where he offers, or 2 p.m.?
I usually do it on Fridays from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. It's sporadic. It's not a weekly thing quite yet, but I bring in local singers and songwriters and sit down in the studio with them for an hour, listen to their music, talk about it, talk about life.
Yeah. Right. And just a couple weeks ago, Evan was with Charlie Vestal, who passed away on Friday. Also in the studio is Brian Dudley. Brian is the owner of Nova Labs, and Nova Labs released Charlie's recordings.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
So both of you have experience of Charlie and wanted to have you in to remember mm-hmm. this young gentleman who, according to my Facebook feed, was very well loved.
Yeah, he was very well loved by a lot of people. He was one of those guys that, like, when he walked into a room, the room kind of lit up a little bit more. So,
I mean, his smile was infectious, and you always knew that you could go up and talk to Charlie, and he would have this very strong air of positivity around him, and that was really comforting.
And how old was Charlie?
He was 27. He just turned 27 this year.
Okay. And
we were fortunate enough that he asked us to run sound and play for his birthday party out at Reliable Street. So we had to play with one of his bands out there and celebrate his birthday with him this year.
Any other memories that you particular memories that you have of Charlie performing or?
We booked a show down in Des Moines on December 23rd, and we played with his band down there in Des Moines. And I remember him being really excited about we played at a club called Lefties, and the whole band was really excited to be playing down in Des Moines at Lefties and stuff. And it was a really fun show. We weren't sure if many people were going to come because it was right before Christmas, and some people did come, which was nice. But really just hanging out with the other bands, there was just a really good vibe, just a bunch of friends like, hey, we're going to put on a show and make some music. And it was a great experience. And Charlie was a highlight of it. I mean, he, you know, smiling and making jokes from the stage and just generally, you know, just having a good time and making sure everybody else had a good time.
And the venue was wide enough for him too.
That's what
he said during the hour. That was one of his standards for whether or not a place is fun to play. And is it wide enough?
Wide,
yeah. I can't explain it either, but that's what he, that's one of the things he and I talked about that Lefty show was the stage was wide enough. The venue was wide enough. So.
Yeah, and it really can't be underestimated, there's a gigantic hole right now in the music community, because everybody knew him, and everybody respected him and loved him. And so, as you've seen from all of the Facebook posts and things like that, just a, you know, stellar human being and very revered songwriter in the community. So it really is a huge loss for us.
I mean, absolutely prolific and unique at the same time. I don't think that we have any Ames songwriters that really remind me of him in that sense. I mean, his style is just very, I said whimsical in the pre-recorded part of the interview, but it's also very, very introspective. He really, the way he weaves in his autobiographical details with the nonsensicalness of some of the lyrics is pretty profound when you listen to it a couple of times. It's catchy, profound, interesting, really makes you think, I guess.
And he went by the name of Flavor Basket.
Mm-hmm. That's right. He actually even explained why he chose that moniker during our hour, and I thought it was kind of funny. It's one of those things that I had always wondered. He decided he wanted a pseudonym like Mark Twain when he was writing poetry when he was a teenager, and he happens to be, from what he said, really into fast food at the time. So Flavor Basket was the first thing that he could think of to write in the little corner of his journal. And that's what he went for, specifically named after, I think, some sort of chicken strip basket or whatever from Dairy Queen. And, I mean, that's classic Charlie. You know?
Very whimsical. And well, we're so grateful to you, Evan, for having recorded him, and we hope to get that show on our website front page so that others can remember him more fully. Any other words, Brian, about your experiences with Charlie Vestal?
I feel very fortunate that we got to put out all of his albums on Nova Labs, and his first release with us was a triple disc set, because he's very prolific. And it was like sort of like a reissue of his first couple albums with a new album in it, and then we did two other albums after that. And they've been constant sellers, and I'm just really proud to have them in our catalog. Going forward, we've decided that we're going to any sales that we make off the albums, we want to keep his catalog in print, because we feel it's important that his legacy be preserved. But we're going to donate any proceeds from that to suicide prevention.
Well, thank you for coming in.
Thanks,
Brian,
for having me.
Yeah, I know you came from across town, and Evan, of course, Evan only had to walk a couple blocks. But we thank you all for joining us today on KHOI Community Radio, a show that features the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I've been your host, Greta Anderson. We started out the show with a little bit of weather from Elwin Taylor, our ISU climatologist, and followed up by a phenology with Pat Schlarbaum. Jennifer Knox joined in with Iowa Bird of Mouth, iowabirdofmouth.com. You can submit a poem about the bald eagle, which is the bird of the month, and it's appropriately so because now's about the time when those bald eagles catch our eye and we can see them at the riverbanks nesting with their mates. Following that, we heard from Jeanette Colton, who's been busy translating for Spanish speakers in our community, and really helping them through the door of our community by providing friendship as well as language services. She is the winner of the Ames Humanitarian Award 2017, which we still don't know whether it'll be presented tonight or in a week at the Martin Luther King Day celebration at the Ames Middle School. Following that was Elizabeth Dinschel, the leader, state leader of Action Iowa, a group that is working on several fronts to ensure Iowans have their human rights and their bargaining rights, collective bargaining rights maintained, have their education funding maintained. They are working hard in the spirit of Hillary Clinton, because they started out as Pantsuit Nation. Finally, we heard from Evan Taylor's show on Charlie Vestal, who passed away on Friday. Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon today. I believe 7 p.m. we will be airing a Martin Luther King speech from the Pacifica Archives, put together with some commentary by Vivica Dillard, host of The Hotspot here on KHOI Community Radio. You can listen to today's Local Talk Show and any of our past Local Talk Shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will find information about our guests along with links to relevant to today's stories. khoifm.org. Local Talk was engineered by Evan Taylor. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was by Charlie Vestal, live from our studio, recorded live in our studio. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878 or through our website. And if you enjoyed the show, please tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.
Things won't change. ears, and I can't hear the whispering wind. 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 Still worth waiting, and I've been on the sidewalk since 9.